I'm Peter Bonner McNiss, and he is Chris Lane. And welcome to another of these regular property briefings. And a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back with you again.
You know, there's something that has puzzled me for a while now. How can you be sure that you're not paying too much when buying a commercial property?
Yeah, look, that's a good question, but you need to look behind the question, because it's not so much that you're paying too much. Rather, what you need to do is ensure that your available cash resources match the specific property that you're looking to buy. And with any commercial property purchase, there are two issues that you need to address, and it even catches out some of the seasoned pros, and, you know, it can become very awkward.
You said there were two areas of concern.
Yeah, there are. You see, as a commercial property investor, you sometimes find yourself overestimating or even underestimating the true amount of money that you have available to invest. I mean, just imagine the disappointment if you had failed to include the full equity stored up in various other existing properties. Now, they may be commercial properties, they may be residential properties where you can organise a line of credit and release funds to go off and invest or expand your existing portfolio in commercial property. But you need to always be aware of what is available other than just cash in the bank. And the other thing is that you could face the situation where, yes, you've got enough funds, you think, to buy the property, and you've worked out you can borrow whatever it is, 60, 70, 75%, whatever you're able to borrow, but you have forgotten about the need to properly allow for your acquisition costs like stamp duty, legal fees, and so on. And unfortunately, the banks won't lend you the money for that. You have to have that over and above what's required to settle on the property. So those are the two key areas that you need to be fully on top of so that you don't get any unpleasant surprises.
Yes, I can understand how investors may overlook the spare equity within other properties they own, but what is the best way to ensure you have made sufficient allowance for various add-on costs that accompany every purchase?
Well, obviously, as an investor, you need to have a simple process to help you come up with the right answer. And I actually, for my clients, make available in the Investor Lab, there's a toolkit. One of the tools in the toolkit is a neat little program called Assessing Your Purchase Power. And that takes into account the equity in other properties and so forth. But let's assume for the moment that you have already sorted out the cash and perhaps a line of credit that you can use to go off and buy a commercial property. And let's keep a simple example and say that you've got 300,000 available equity. As I said, that might be cash, it might be through a line of credit. It's not really relevant as far as the lender's concerned. And for your intended next purchase, you're planning to borrow 70% of its value. Now, in that case, you need to come up with 30% of the purchase price by way of equity in order to complete the deal. Now, just based on simple arithmetic, it looks as though you're in a position to purchase a property for $1 million. In other words, you've got 30% is the 300,000 and you're borrowing 700,000. So it's a pretty simple calculation.
But you haven't allowed for the other acquisition costs yet. Is there a quick and easy way to do that without the need to prepare a detailed spreadsheet every time?
Yeah, you're right. You haven't. You've got acquisition costs like the stamp duty, legals, valuation, and so on. So the question then is, how can you quickly calculate those without having to go into too much detail? You know, as you said, a spreadsheet. It's the last thing you want to be doing. And there's a simple way to do that. Now, my suggestion is that you allow about 8% as a rule of thumb for your acquisition costs. The largest one is stamp duty at 5.5% of the purchase price. Now, what I find over time, it's clear that your acquisition cost will probably end up around about 7.3-7.8%. But I always like to allow 8% to be on the safe side. But what I'm saying is that you'll probably get change out of that additional 8%. Now, for the quick and easy calculation, what you need to do is to add this 8% to the 30% equity that you're going to provide. And then you divide that figure, in other words, 38%, into the amount of equity that you have available. So for the current example, what you'd be doing is dividing $300,000, which is your available equity, by the 38%, and then you get a total of $790,000, not $1 million. Because the difference between the 790 and a million is your acquisition costs. And by doing this, you now know that you have all those add-on acquisition costs covered. So it's not a difficult calculation. And just so we're clear, let's suppose that you were going to borrow 75%. In that case, the calculation would be 300,000. And instead of dividing it by 38%, you'd be dividing it by 25% being the equity component in the loan-to-value ratio, because you're borrowing 75%, plus the 8% add-ons. So you'd be dividing it by 33% rather than 38%, in which case you would have a figure of $910,000 that you would be able to have as the contract price for the purchase of the property, knowing that you also have your acquisition costs covered at the same time. Whereas if you were borrowing 65% because you were going for non-recourse finance, let's say, the calculation would be the 300,000 divided by 35% being equity, 8% the acquisition cost, therefore you divide it by 43%. And your total would then be only $700,000. But you would know when you go to borrow the 65% that you've already covered from your equity the add-on costs that are involved. So those are the figures. So it's a very simple thing. All you do is, as I said, is add 8% to the percentage of equity in the transaction and then divide that into the available cash or equity that you have available to put towards buying your next property. So the beauty is then that you know and you're comfortable that you're not going to overcommit yourself. And as I said, the only other thing you've got to consider is making sure that you have garnered together all the available equity that you might have in cash or in other properties that you may own.
That's really helpful. And I just love some of these easy rules of thumb that you come up with.
Yes, look, they're rather handy. And of course, before you proceed any further, you should prepare a full projected cash flow on an after-tax basis, which most of my clients already do. And again, they're given access to the necessary software to prepare that.
Look, thanks for walking us through everything today, and I look forward to our time together next month.
And me too.